Chapter 13.
Listen, listen, I would take a whisper if that's all you had to give. But it isn't, is it? You could come and save me and try to chase it crazy right out of my head.
I won't work with blasters, Obi-Wan said, jaw set. John sighed and let himself run a hand through his hair in frustration. They'd been training with other weapons recently to make sure they could operate without their lightsabers. It was something Dark Woman had drilled into him, and one of her teachings that he agreed with wholeheartedly. Luckily, Obi-Wan hadn't been like many of the others in the temple that John had observed, who eschewed fighting anything that wasn't pure lightsaber combat. His friend agreed that training to fight without their sabers was important, even if he wasn't intending to become a shadow. Learning more about the Jedi Shadows had certainly been an experience for John. The role sounded like something Dark Woman would have approved of. Operating undercover was something of her specialty, after all, and something she'd trained John in extensively. She had always followed any rumors of Darkseid users in the Outer Rim as well, and John wondered if that had been her role in the temple before she left it and her name behind. Regardless, Obi-Wan was perfectly open to training with vibroblades and hand-to-hand and electrostaffs, and even weighted chains. His friend wasn't familiar with all of them, unlike John, but he was a dab hand with various lengths of vibroblades and a dirty fighter when it came to hand-to-hand. But Obi-Wan flat-out refused to train with blasters. It's not that John liked them particularly. They made it a bit too easy to kill, however hypocritical that may have been as a Force user. But blasters were common. If they were undercover, or even just trying to stay under the radar, it was almost expected for them to be carrying a blaster. Obi-Wan didn't have to like blasters to at least be proficient with them. That's what John kept saying, at least. It was novel to feel comfortable pushing a topic, but he knew, after 3 months of friendship, that Obi-Wan wouldn't abandon him if they argued. They had shared so much with each other, showed the other so many of their broken pieces. They were bound together now, in a way that John almost didn't know what to do with. There had never been someone he was comfortable with like this before. He didn't even think about talking with Obi-Wan anymore. The words came without hesitation. Touch was still new, still cautious, but John didn't even flinch from him now. Instead, he easily pressed against Obi-Wan's side when they were catching their breath after a fierce spar. He cradled Obi-Wan's wrist without hesitation when healing a sprain. Obi-Wan was his first friend, and a limb he hadn't known he was missing. So, John pushed on the blasters and didn't worry about the fallout. Considering Obi-Wan had never pushed back like this before, on any topic, John was starting to suspect there was something important beneath his protests that needed to be teased out. John saw it as his duty if it would make Obi-Wan stronger in the end. "You don't need to carry one regularly," John said, patiently. "But you need to be proficient just in case." A muscle in Obi-Wan's cheek jumped. "We can start with just assembling and disassembling them if you're nervous." A sound like an overboiled tea kettle rang from Obi-Wan's throat, and he spun around. John didn't flinch, even though he could feel his friend's frustration in the Force. The tension was building, building towards something. John didn't need his master's ability to sense shatter points to know that something was about to break. He just hoped it would be for the better. John continued, "We can set them to stun. I know how blasters work," Obi-Wan snapped. He spun back to face John. His face was flushed, and John almost thought he could see his friend's pulse pounding in the thin skin of his throat. "Knowing the theory isn't the same as using one," John chided. The provocation was clumsy, but it worked, because John could almost feel something in the Force shift. Obi-Wan threw up his hands. "I've used one, trust me. I've killed dozens of people with a blaster," Obi-Wan shouted. His voice broke painfully. "I've trained 7-year-olds to be snipers. I've had a jammed slug thrower explode in my hands, and I've patched up blaster wounds on myself after burying preteens who'd been shot through the skull. Is that what you want to hear, John? Is that better for you than theory?" Obi-Wan's voice was venomous. Silence hung in the air for a long, long second. John wasn't hurt by the outburst, far from it. He'd wanted it, after all, and no matter how frustrated Obi-Wan had gotten, there'd been nothing in his body language that signaled threat. Instead, everything from his friend's bent knees to his flushed face screamed, "Scared, hurting, run." No, John wasn't hurt. Instead, he was lining up everything Obi-Wan had revealed with what he already knew about his friend's past. They'd spoken of Bandimir, and Xanatos, and Bruk, and Tal's death. This matched up to none of them. When John arranged the events within the rough timeline he'd constructed, there was a gaping hole in the beginning of Obi-Wan's Padawanship. He'd bet his lightsaber that whatever new horror his friend had just revealed slotted into that gap. John waited until Obi-Wan's breathing smoothed and the flush began to leave his friend's face. Right before the emotion in Obi-Wan's eyes shifted too far into something like shame, he struck. "Did you fight in a war with child soldiers?" Any pink that might have been lingering in Obi-Wan's cheeks was immediately washed away as the other Padawan went ghostly pale. John quickly stepped forward and pressed himself against his friend's side, taking some of his weight as he eased them to the ground. Obi-Wan slumped against him. The effect was somewhat comical, considering their size difference, but John bore the weight easily. He forced himself past his nerves and grabbed Obi-Wan's hand in a sweaty, tight grip. "You can tell me," John said. And Obi-Wan did. We were on a mission to retrieve a lost Jedi. The planet was Melida Dawn, and they had been at war for generations, Melida against Dawn, killing each other because that was all they'd ever known how to do. A Jedi had been sent, Master Tal, and one of the factions had captured her, tortured her. Obi-Wan swallowed. John squeezed his hand and kept his eyes focused straight ahead, just like Obi-Wan was doing. "We didn't know, but there was a third faction on the planet, the children of the two factions, who wanted to stop the fighting. They called themselves the Young." John had a sinking feeling that he knew where this story was going. "The Young helped us find Master Tal, and she wasn't in great shape. She needed medical attention, but the Young asked us to stay and help them fight." Obi-Wan's throat bobbed. "There were 3-year-olds living in the sewers, fighting for peace. Sarasi and Neeld, the two leaders of the Young, they asked us to fight with them." Obi-Wan shuddered. "Master Qui-Gon said it wasn't our mission, and that we needed to take Tal back to the temple. I drew my lightsaber, and he told me I could either return to the temple or leave the order. I gave him my saber, and I stayed to fight." John wanted to be sick. He hadn't lived an easy life so far, and he had little innocence remaining, but listening to Obi-Wan retell a story of guerrilla warfare, of learning to fire a blaster and catch incoming bolts with the Force, of children even younger than John had been killing and being killed by their own parents. And Obi-Wan's master had left him behind, over an attachment of all things. John's opinion of his friend's absent master had never been very favorable, but as Obi-Wan continued to talk with a faraway look in his eyes, John reminded himself over and over that hate was not the Jedi way. He was gripping Obi-Wan's hand so hard it had to hurt, but his friend only held back just as tight. "We were so close," Obi-Wan said. John didn't have to look to hear the tears in his voice. "We were so close to ending the fighting, and then Sarasi." Obi-Wan shook his head. "I called for help from the temple, and Master Qui-Gon came back. We ended the war, and after a probation period, he took me back as his Padawan." "Probation," John said, throat tight. Obi-Wan loosened his grip and tried to curl into himself. John didn't let him. "I left the Order because of attachment," the Council said. "I needed to prove myself." Ah, and that sensation was familiar. Betrayal. John struggled, every time he heard about Obi-Wan's past, to reconcile what his friend said with his master on the Council who treated him so carefully, so gently. There was a disconnect, a horrible certainty, that someone was lying to him, and as much as it hurt, John knew it wasn't Obi-Wan. "You did the right thing," John said. He finally turned to look at his friend and dropped Obi-Wan's hand. He didn't let the lack of touch stand for long, and wrapped his arms around his friend in a hug that felt terribly awkward. And then Obi-Wan's chest shook, and his arms came up to wrap desperately around John. "No one has ever—" The tears were thick in his voice. John squeezed him firmly. "You did the right thing," he said firmly. "You're a good person, Obi-Wan." John said nothing else, as Obi-Wan's tears soaked through to his skin, only held him. Eventually, gradually, Obi-Wan's breathing slowed and his tears with it. More and more of his weight shifted onto John, even as his fingers remained knotted in John's tabards. It took a moment for John to realize that his friend had fallen asleep. The amount of trust that implied, the care. John felt a lump grow in his throat. Even though the right thing to do was wake Obi-Wan and send him to bed, John didn't do that. He found that he really, truly did not want to let go of his friend anytime soon. When John closed his eyes, all he could see was Obi-Wan, a smaller, bloodier Obi-Wan, firing a blaster at a towering figure and surrounded by dead children. The image only went away when John slowly lowered them down to lying on the mat, arms still firmly wrapped around each other. There, on the cell floor, John felt safe in a way that he still struggled to achieve in his master's quarters. With Obi-Wan by his side, breathing into his hair, he felt like nothing could touch him. John barely remembered to set an alarm on his comm before he was drifting off, easier than he'd ever experienced. Mace had a full day of council meetings ahead, and worse, he was on Senate duty in the afternoon. John had class, so Mace was planning on letting him escape that particular nightmare. Mace, on the other hand, had no choice. As a result, he was looking forward to breakfast with his Padawan as the one bright spot of his day. John did not seem of the same mind. Although his dark circles seemed smaller today, everything else about John was unhappy. Mace's Padawan pushed his first meal around on his plate aimlessly, even though he'd never shown an inclination to waste food before. When Mace felt along their bond, he found nothing but shields locked down tight. That did nothing but make his concern swirl higher. He hadn't felt a nightmare from John during the night, but perhaps he'd slept through it. "Did you sleep all right, Padawan?" Mace asked, trying to catch John's eye. When he failed, he pushed his concern and care down the bond and hoped that it made it past John's shields. The silence went on so long that Mace thought John wouldn't answer at all. But finally, he looked up and met Mace's eyes. They were shuttered in a way they hadn't been since those first tentative weeks. "What would I have to do to make you get rid of me?" Cold rushed through Mace so quickly that he felt his heart stutter. "Pardon?" John's face was defiant like Mace had never seen before, a clear challenge in the line of his jaw. He was pushing back in a way Mace had honestly thought they were years away from. This should be a moment to celebrate, but all he could feel was slowly multiplying dread. All Mace could see was the minute shaking John was trying so hard to hide. "What would I have to do to make you get rid of me?" John repeated, voice full of paper-thin bravado. Mace swallowed and released his trepidation to the Force. This moment was important. There was a shatter point, deceptively small but far-reaching, resting on this moment. The only way out was forward. "There is nothing you could do to make me get rid of you, John," Mace said. It was the truth, and the only thing he could offer. John's face twisted. He looked so utterly torn and devastated that it should be echoing in the Force. But it wasn't. "That's not true," John said, voice wavering. Mace sat back in his chair and laid his hands palm up on the table between them. "It is," he said, calm and steady. "What if I disobeyed you?" Mace huffed. "If you obey me all the time, especially as a teenager in a few years, I would be concerned." John shook his head, clearly not satisfied. "What if I disobeyed you on a mission and someone got hurt?" "Mistakes happen," Mace said slowly, "and I know you would never do so maliciously. You are a Padawan, and I would be a fool to expect you to be perfect. We would discuss what happened and how to move forward, but I would never get rid of you." John pushed back from the table. Mace had a nerve-wracking moment when he thought his Padawan was going to run, but instead, he used the extra space to curl into himself in his chair. John wrapped his arms around himself in a sad parody of a hug. He looked so small, so young. What if I drew my lightsaber on you outside of a spar? Mace frowned. I would primarily be concerned with what I did to make you feel unsafe, or like I was not listening to you. Something in the air shifted. John dropped his eyes to the floor. What if I tried to hurt you because I was angry? What if I fell? Mace didn't understand where this was coming from, but he could tell this was something John had held in for a long, long time. Longer than the Order had known of his existence if Mace had to wager. Longer than he'd had a name. Mace had never thought about his Padawans falling before, not seriously. While he waged his own war with the dark side, danced the line with Vapod, he'd never truly been concerned for Depa or John. Though the galaxy was shadowed, they were both so light and so dear. He'd thought it a shame, what happened with Xanatos, and considered how things might have been done differently. It was strange to apply those thoughts to John. Despite their newness, Mace was utterly sure of his answer. He sent his shorty down the bond. I would never abandon you, John. I would help you find your way back to the light, no matter how long it took. There is so much good in you. John's head jerked up like he couldn't help himself. But a master's duty is to care for and guide their Padawan. You are a child. Yes, you can make your own choices and decisions, but it is my role and my privilege to help you make those decisions and guide you to making the right decisions, Mace said. Even when you are a knight, you will always be my Padawan, and I will always be here to support you. The Shatterpoint broke, gently. In the moment, it signaled nothing except a softening of John's shoulders and a small burst of gratitude sent to Mace along their bond. In the future, the impact was far and long enough that he couldn't see it clearly, but he could almost imagine John's voice curling around those words and repeating them back to someone else. End of chapter 13.